You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tonight after 7, it's Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. Tonight, Ken and his guests take stock of Donald Trump's first week as president and what we've learned so far. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network. First, British Prime Minister Theresa May is in the United States this week to talk to President Trump. Her visit makes her the first foreign leader to meet with President Trump since he took the oath of office last Friday. Trump is scheduled to have a phone conversation with Russian President Vladimir Putin tomorrow afternoon, I believe. And even though this is his first diplomatic visit that he's received, President Trump's first week in office has made waves in the diplomatic community. Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto canceled his scheduled trip to the U.S. after President Trump doubled down on his desire to build a wall between the two countries, and longtime top officials at the State Department resigned unexpectedly this week. Nehal Tusi joins us to talk about all this news. She's the foreign affairs reporter for Politico. Nehal, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. I am a foreign affairs reporter for Politico.
They have more than one. Good point.
On my own.
There's a lot of foreign affairs to cover. Fair enough. Well, let's start with some breaking news this afternoon. President Trump has been putting out a lot of memoranda and other things this week, presidential executive actions. This new one, he's vetting measures to, quote, keep radical Islamic terrorists out of the U.S. Did he give any indication of who would be targeted by these measures and what they would be?
So at this moment, the White House has not yet released the final text of this order. So what we know is based on drafts that have been circulating over the past week, and it's entirely possible that what he signed today is substantially different than what's in the drafts. I want to be really clear about that. But what's in the drafts contains a number of things that are targeting mainly refugees, as well as people who want to visit the United States or immigrate to the United States from a handful of Muslim-majority countries. And basically, also, I should say, Donald Trump wants to ban Syrian refugees indefinitely until he is satisfied that the program is strong enough that they can be allowed back in, and there's no time frame on that. He wants to halt all refugee admissions for at least 120 days while the program is reviewed. He wants to cut the number of refugees that the U.S. accepts this year down to 50,000 from 110,000. And he wants to basically halt or suspend the visas issuance to people in a handful of countries, Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Sudan for sure, possibly Libya, Yemen, and Somalia as well. And also, the drafts have indicated that he wants to, he's asking his officials to come up with a plan to establish safe zones inside Syria. But the drafts have been very vague about that. So it's very, if the final order is the same as the draft, it's just full of a lot of very, very complicated orders that, frankly, are going to be difficult to implement and, in some cases, legally very challenging.
Some people have been pointing out that the drafts, again, assuming that the final order matches the drafts, the countries singled out for special attention don't include countries that were the source of the, for example, the 9/11 attackers, places like Saudi Arabia and Egypt. Is that right?
That's correct. That's one of the strange things. I mean, I honestly don't know of a situation where a Sudanese person has attacked the United States in a terrorist attack. I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but yeah, you have countries like Sudan and Iraq also, which is technically an ally of the United States, and Iran, of course, which is not. But you don't have countries like Saudi Arabia, which had 15 of the 19 hijackers on September 11th were Saudis, Egypt, where there is Islamist activity and included at least one of the hijackers. And places like Pakistan and Afghanistan, Pakistan in particular, has been a huge source of terrorist recruits. So the choices are really odd, and possibly it could speak to the fact that the Trump administration values its alliance with Egypt's leader right now. The Saudis may simply be too powerful to anger in this particular way. But I will add this one thing. Generally speaking, overall, Trump wants, according to the drafts, much stricter vetting across the board. He has said he doesn't want people coming to this country who, you know, he believes oppress gay people, for example. So it's possible that our consular officials who are dealing with people, say, from Saudi Arabia who want a visa, may start asking questions like, what is your stance on homosexuality? And if someone says, I oppose it, then they might not give them the visa. So it could impact those countries, but not quite as directly as the other ones that are mentioned.
A lot of maybes still, it sounds like, on this. this. Want to move on to some of the other diplomatic news. We have Theresa May coming from Britain, the British Prime Minister now, met with President Trump, a news conference together today. What were some of the big stories that came out of that?
Well, it sounds as if Theresa May and Trump, you know, they sounded like they had a decent conversation, but I'm not sure that she walked away with all the promises that she wanted. She said that she impressed upon him that he should keep sanctions on Russia, for instance, and that he told her that he supports NATO 100%. At the same time, Theresa May is really hopeful of getting a bilateral trade deal with the U.S. The thing is, you know, promises on that front are, they're all fine right now, but they depend on so many things, such as when the United Kingdom actually leaves the European Union. There's all sorts of rules, and it's not really clear, frankly, that Trump has thought all of this out just yet.
Talking to Nihal Tusi from Politico, looking at foreign affairs, foreign relations under the new administration of President Donald Trump. Staying with that British state visit here, there's kind of some tension there. Prime Minister May talked about, we agree with President Trump, we don't want to get entangled in long, complicated foreign wars, referring, I assume, to Iraq there. But she's hoping for a commitment for U.S. backing of NATO, sticking to NATO to prevent further expansion from Russia.
That's right. She wants a combination of things, and it's going to be hard to say how it will all end up working out. Because, for instance, she says that it's not a good idea to do these long, drawn-out wars. At the same time, Trump today, according to the draft, I should say, wants his team to come up with an idea for a safe zone inside Syria. And that could, in the long run, lead to U.S. troops having to get involved in another Middle Eastern war. And so on that front, the U.S. often turns to its allies, such as the U.K., for assistance and to NATO for assistance. And will Britain back the U.S. then? Theresa May made it sound like, you know, she doesn't want any part of that. So these things are all, it's just all going to depend on a host of different factors, many of them that are interlinked on a number of levels that I'm not sure that the new administration entirely appreciates just yet.
Well, linked to both Great Britain and Syria is the issue of relations with Russia. President Trump, again, scheduled to talk to Vladimir Putin tomorrow. A big question mark there through the campaign. Senator John McCain has said he wants to start looking at congressional action to maintain sanctions on Russia, even if Donald Trump tries to abandon those sanctions. What are you watching for in this conversation tomorrow and moving forward?
This is really going to be extraordinary. Donald Trump said today that, you know, he doesn't know the gentleman. He referred to Mr. Putin. And it's just going to be fascinating to see how their conversation goes and if they decide to meet in person as well. That being said, there has been some consideration, according to Trump's team, of possibly just trying to lift the sanctions on Russia that are related to Ukraine. But that, of course, is going to upset a lot of people in Europe. And that's another factor that the Trump team has to consider. And whether that's ultimately going to work out could all depend also on Congress, because, I mean, not even counting the Democrats, who obviously are up in arms over the idea of lifting sanctions, many, many leading Republicans, including John McCain and Lindsey Graham, are adamantly opposed to the idea of lifting sanctions on Russia. They're very hawkish on Russia. And McCain has and Graham have even said that if Trump tries to lift unilaterally a lot of these sanctions, Congress will come back and impose legislation or push through legislation to puts the sanctions back in. And so that's going to end up being a fight within the Republican Party. And it's extraordinary. And it's amazing. He's been on the job 1 week, and so much has already happened.
Well, here's a twist I hadn't considered. You wrote about it. Right now, the U.S. shares intelligence data, the intelligence community does, with intelligence agencies of our allies. You write that American spies, people in the intelligence trade, are worried that cooperation could come to an end if the United States is too close to Russia, who a lot of these European agencies are worried about, and worried about, hey, is our information going to go via the U.S. administration to Russia?
That's entirely right. I mean, some of the folks feel very worried about that. And it's not just Russia. Israel, for instance, is worried that if the Trump team shares information with Russia, that the Russians will share that information with the Iranians who are working with the Russians in Syria. That's how complicated all this is. But I should add one other thing. Another concern of a lot of the U.S. spies and their allies overseas is just that Trump is himself so off the cuff in his remarks. He is a bit erratic or kind of unpredictable in what he does say, when he does say it, where he does say it. So there's just some concern that if they share information and it reaches the president's ears, he might, you know, perhaps inadvertently just share it or spill it out in a way that actually hurts those countries' very hard-fought methods and sources.
Nihal Tusi is with us now to talk about foreign policy news in the new presidential administration. We still haven't gotten to Mexico yet. That's coming up. Nihal's a foreign affairs reporter at Politico. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of what we've been hearing from President Trump and his administration on foreign policy 1 week in? What role should the U.S. play in the world? And what are you looking for when it comes to Russia, to NATO, to Mexico? Call 800-642-1234, or Syria for that matter. 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. More coming up. Maybe we'll hear from you on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about U.S. foreign policy over the last week under the new administration. Nihal Tusi is with us, foreign affairs reporter at Politico, looking at a lot of news since last Friday's inauguration. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you agree with some of the policy platforms of building a wall, changing refugee policy in the United States that President Trump has advocated for? What about those question marks? Should we make continue a strong commitment to NATO? Should we continue to have sanctions on Russia over annexation of Ukrainian territory? What do you want our relationship with Mexico to look like? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on our Central Time Facebook page. Nihal, all this has been going on. We haven't talked about Mexico yet. A meeting scheduled, then canceled, with the Mexican president, Enrique Peña Nieto. Tell us the story there.
Well, this is really, to me, the most remarkable story of this week. Mexico is America's third largest trading partner. It is America's neighbor. 6 million U.S. jobs, at least 6 million, depend on that relationship. And yet, within a week, it's come under extraordinary strain. Actually, I guess longer than a week, considering how President Trump acted during a campaign toward Mexico. But the stakes are really, really high. And what basically ended up happening was that traditionally, the Mexican president comes to visit the United States soon after a new president takes office. And President Peña Nieto was going to be here on January 31st. He sent some people ahead of time to prepare for the meeting. Some of his top officials came. And the day that they were supposed to meet with White House officials, it was announced that Donald Trump was going to be issuing executive orders on immigration and border enforcement. Orders that in many ways are very offensive to Mexicans. And then the next morning, on the second day of those meetings, Trump tweeted out something that basically suggested that if Enrique Peña Nieto did not care for what he was doing, that he should just cancel the meeting. And so that is what Enrique Peña Nieto did. And the Mexican president, you have to understand, is facing a lot of domestic pressure. He is considered weak because he hasn't stood up enough to Trump. And he has, like, a very, very low popularity. So he has to kind of do this to safeguard what little political base he has left. That being said, you know, things went very sour very quickly, but today Trump and Peña Nieto held a phone call. We were told it was about an hour long, that it went well. We don't know really ultimately what the results of it will be, but I think both sides are starting to understand. Certainly, you know, the Mexicans understand it. It seems like the Trump team perhaps is understanding that, you know, doing a trade war with Mexico is going to have a lot of repercussions on a lot of people. And a lot of people among the people who are unhappy about this are Republican lawmakers, including from places like Arizona and Texas, border states that have strong ties to Mexico.
Right. People are pointing toward this being a little more complicated. Some factory jobs have moved from the United States to Mexico, but some people are pointing to companies that have a supply chain that involves exporting stuff into Mexico, importing stuff back in the United States. It's a complicated picture, slapping up a wall and maybe tariffs. So that it's not clear what was going on with talk of tariffs could really complicate things, couldn't it?
Exactly. It could just put in a lot of structural barriers, physically and not physically, that could really undermine the relationship on a lot of levels. And the other thing to actually point out is there are actually a number of top Mexican companies that own American companies. And that's another relationship that could get affected in a negative way. So it's extremely complicated. And at the same time, the relationship with Mexico is not just about trade and immigration. It's also about counterterrorism. It's also about tourism. It's also about counter-narcotics. That's a big one. And over the last 20 years, Mexico really has gotten a lot closer to the United States in its outlook and in its cooperation. And it seems like a lot of that is now at stake.
We just have another minute left, Nihal. I wanted to ask you about this news from the State Department. A lot of top officials leaving there. Rex Tillerson hasn't been confirmed yet. People saying from the Trump administration, oh, this is normal, cleaning house, out with the old, in with the new. Some people saying, yeah, but these positions usually stick around for a while, at least to the transition. What do you make of what we're seeing there?
I definitely think it's the Trump team cleaning house of a lot of people that they consider too tarred because of their association with the Obama administration. And you're right, some of these folks, they handle very complicated, often technical things like managing diplomatic security, that sort of thing. But traditionally, when a new administration comes in, these people are required to submit their resignations, and then it's up to the new administration to accept those resignations or not. Normally, they have them stay on for a while just because it helps with the continuity. But in this particular case, a whole host of them have been told that their resignations have been accepted. That has left some people at the State Department really worried that you're going to see even more people leave. But also just, it's also talent loss and also loss of managerial skills and knowledge at a time when there really haven't been any replacements announced. And that's the thing. So you could have like a largely leaderless organization kind of trying to figure out what it's supposed to do at what could be a very critical time.
Nihal, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you so much.
That's Nihal Tusi, foreign affairs reporter for Politico, looking at foreign affairs and the Trump administration.